Holy One, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight. Amen. Amen. Please be seated. Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. When I first heard this in church as a child, it made no sense at all to me. A mother asked Jesus for help with her sick daughter, and Jesus talks about table manners. Later explanations for this metaphor for the divide between Jews and Gentiles have tried to soften it by saying that Jesus didn't really liken the Gentile mother to a dog. The term was actually diminutive for puppies. In other words, they say Jesus didn't really mean it. But one thing we know about this short and concise gospel of Mark is that Mark did not use words carelessly. Then and now, to refer to another person, especially a person of different ethnic or cultural origin, as a dog, is a cruel insult. And hearing it from the mouth of Jesus is like hearing your sweet, mild-mannered granny using a racial slur. It is shocking. Now, it's not that Jesus was never grumpy. He railed at his disciples, especially in Mark. He talked back to his mother. He called the Pharisees hypocrites, like in the gospel last week, and he turned over temple tables. But this is different. Jesus not only refuses to help a desperate mother, he also cruelly insults her personally. Now, this is jarring and troublesome, and we can't deny this. Now, perhaps it's one reason why the lectionary follows this episode with the story of the healing of the deaf man, one that shows Jesus in a more positive light. He has done everything well. That's what we're left with. Surely, we hope, Jesus has his reasons for speaking so harshly. But reasons are not an excuse. We are called to engage with the discomfort of this story, not to gloss over it. This passage, in its entirety, with both healings, is telling us something not only about the boundary-transgressing grace of God, but about the gift of confrontation. Jesus set out and went away to the region of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know he was there. So Jesus is apparently alone in Gentile territory. And unlike the occasions where word has gone out ahead of him and the crowds are awaiting him, all crowding around, somehow he has managed to find a measure of deeply desired quiet. But it's not necessarily peace and quiet, because Mark has set this scene deliberately. Jesus is an outsider in a land of wealthy Gentiles. He's out of his comfort zip code. Now, this region where he is the home of people descended from the Hellenist Seleucid dynasty, which included Antiochus IV Epiphanes, an infamous oppressor of Jews, desecrator of the temple, and the one whose actions triggered the 2nd century BCE Maccabean revolt. And in addition to this, Tyre is a neighbor to Sidon, which is also weighted with baggage. The Book of Kings says that King Ahab of the northern kingdom of Israel married Jezebel. Yes, that Jezebel, the Sidonian Phoenician daughter of the king of Tyre. And she was notorious, as you have probably heard. She normalized idol worship in Israel, which is a grave, grave sin. And she committed all kinds of mischief until meeting a violent death. And that's the short version. So this area is fraught with history. Now, given that context, for a moment, I'd like you to imagine yourself traveling to a country by yourself that is fraught with historical, cultural relationship. It has a fraught historical, cultural relationship with the U.S. Imagine. It's a place that makes you feel uncomfortable, if not unsafe. Now, you are in Jesus' sandals. So there's a knock at the door, and it is a woman. And Mark makes crystal clear what he wants you to know about her, a Gentile of Syrophoenician origin. Now, this description exemplifies the background that I've just been describing. And they face each other, Jesus and this woman. So what are the cultural boundaries that they're facing in this moment? He is a man. She is a woman. He is a Jew. She is a Gentile. He is an outsider while she is native to the area. He represents the demographic margins of the region while she represents the dominant culture. He is a Messiah. She is a mother with a sick child. Now, we usually refer to her as the Syrophoenician woman, but it's more accurate to call her the Syrophoenician mother, because it is in this capacity that she comes before Jesus, transgressing his solitude and pleading for help for her daughter. That's what most mothers do when their children are in peril and they are at the end of their resources to help them. We don't know how she found out about Jesus. We only know that her world was upside down as long as that demon held her daughter, and that she'd heard that Jesus was known for turning worlds right side up again. So the mother bows down before Jesus and she begs, "Please, please help my child." Now, she is a Gentile. Jesus has healed a Gentile before in Mark's gospel when he exorcised a legion of demons in the land of the Gerasenes. But they're not there. They're here in this place with its freighted history, with its wealthy Hellenistic majority. Is this perhaps the lens through which Jesus sees her? Not as a mother, but as a trigger. Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. He's saying that God's blessing and grace belong first to God's chosen children. And then he calls her a dog, not a 21st century pampered member of the family, but a first century wild, dangerous, dirty scavenger. And with that, he refuses to heal her daughter. Think about that. It shocks us. Why would he say such a thing? Reasons are not the same as excuses. So we hold our breath and wait to see what happens next. And our eyes naturally turn to the mother, which may be what Mark intended all along. How will she respond to Jesus' rejection? Biblical storyteller Richard Swanson observes that, quote, "The decisive moment in this scene is not the moment the mother kneels before Jesus, but the moment she stands up to him. Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs," she says. So much is happening here. First, she has a choice to slink away under the weight of this insult, but she doesn't. Instead, she chooses to confront him. But she is a clever mother. She doesn't dismiss his negative feelings. She maneuvers around what she cannot deny about herself, which is that there is much that divides them: gender, history, culture, religion. And she says, "Yes, and. Yes, and my daughter is still deserving of God's grace and healing." She has listened carefully, heard Jesus say that the children of Israel should be fed first, not exclusively. So her yes and acknowledges the primary focus of Jesus' mission to the Jews, while at the same time claiming healing for her daughter. Her confrontation is in effect a prophetic act, an insistent call to Jesus to remember that God's dream will encompass both Jews and Gentiles. She reminds him of his calling. That's the work of a prophet. And Jesus' eyes are opened. He no longer sees the Syrophoenician Gentile. He sees the mother. Now, in Matthew's version of this story, Jesus' response is, "O woman, your faith is great." Mark, on the other hand, emphasizes not the mother's faith, but her words. He says, "For saying that, you may go. The demon has left your daughter." It is her gift of confrontation, her persistent, self-aware, and yes, faithful willingness to speak her truth to Jesus that opens his heart to her plight and reminds him of the transgressive nature of the dream of God, a kingdom without boundaries. Ephatha, be opened. The gift of confrontation. It's a little strange to think of it this way. Our culture is filled with confrontation. The destructive confrontation of polarization and rigidity and fear, of figuratively or literally getting up in someone's face. And it is perhaps for that reason that many of us fear it. We don't want to rock the boat or risk rejection. Anyone who has been on the wrong end of an angry confrontation may understandably be shy about risking it again. Believe me, I tend to resemble that remark. So in order to claim the gift of confrontation, we need to listen first, to be self-aware, and to engage our imagination, to be open, ephatha, to a new possibility for the future, a world turned right side up. Now, this is an important calling for all of us, to cultivate the ability to speak honestly yet vulnerably to those in power, to the entrenched, to those we disagree with, and yes, even to God. Like the Syrophoenician mother, we bear within us great love and yet fear for a world in peril and need, beset by demons of all kinds. Yes, and we are equipped with prophetic imagination to envision a more expansive and inclusive future, and to challenge our neighbors, our government, our culture, and yes, our churches to choose love over fear, healing over division, compassion over complacency. The gift of confrontation carries with it the risk of rejection. Yes, and it also carries with it the possibility of transformed relationship and expanded vision. It is worth the risk, always worth the risk to try. Ephatha, let us be opened. Amen.